on this post-election day edition of the Buckmaster Show. Buckmaster along with Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Tom, it was a weird election night. You know, it seems like I tried to watch it, not real late, but everything was too early to call. We can't call it now. And it's going to be a few days.
It's still that with many of the races. People keep dropping ballots off up in Maricopa County.
I don't know what's going on. Buckmaster on Wednesday, November 9th, 2022. Our radio station, 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. Have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Of course, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Tim Stuller's here, the ace columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Hey, Tim, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Let's go also on the live line to Dan Scheer, the editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, and also the editorial director for the 24 WIC newspapers, WIC owned by the group that is based out of Sierra Vista. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, and we have to update that number. On October 1st, we bought 5 more newspapers.
What?
So we're now in 13 states, and we own about 30 newspapers.
Oh my goodness! So you've got more traveling ahead. Are these more papers in the Northwest or?
No, they're actually not far from here, so it would be like Kingman and Needles, California, Laughlin, Nevada, and then a couple other little ones over there. So they're a newspaper group, and actually we bought 50% of them, so we own half of 5 more newspapers. So, yep, we're going to be busy, and I'll be up there soon.
All right, Tim Stuller, some of your thoughts about what has turned out to be the best midterm election for the Democrats in 20 years.
Well, you know, after 2016, I tried to stop paying much attention to polls because obviously they were wrong in 2016, and I've more, you know, you can't help but notice, but you just can't count on them anymore because they people don't respond. And there are, you know, of course, always underlying assumptions about turnout and that sort of thing that may or may not be right. And so I think we're seeing, not necessarily in Arizona, I mean, we'll see how it plays out here. In some of the races in Arizona, it looks different than what most of the polls were showing. And nationwide, I think more so. And it just goes to show that these narratives that build up, like that Hillary Clinton was going to win easily in 2016, or that the Republicans were going to have a red wave in 2022, they just, you know, they gained their own momentum. And you got to try to resist them.
Dan, some of your thoughts, and I'm very curious. All the attention has been at the top of the ticket, and I guess rightly so, in Arizona. Some of your thoughts, and can you kind of give us an overview on the legislative districts that affect us here in southern Arizona?
Well, Sarita now is split, so I'm now paying real close attention to two legislative districts, 19 and 21. One leans left, one leans right. That's how it pretty much played out. We did have one upstart Democrat running in LD19 because she just felt like Republicans should not waltz into the job unchallenged, and she was very enthusiastic and put up a good fight. She's not going to win it, but that district actually has pieces of 5 counties, and so that's how that's going to play out. We had some other districts up and around the Tucson area, some too close to call, others, you know, not too many surprises at this point, but we'll see how those play out also. But southern Arizona, I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of changes at this point as far as how, you know, the people we're sending north. So things landed pretty much as we expected down here.
Let me, hi, Dan. Thanks for your analysis. Let me point out a couple interesting ones. I've been following LD 17 relatively closely. That's the district that was created in order to give Republican or right-leaning residents of Southern Arizona more representation in the legislature. So, at this stage, the Republicans are leading. However, so Justine Wodzak in the Senate race has taken a lead over Mike Nickerson. Interestingly, in the House race, Rachel Jones has a pretty solid lead of a few hundred votes. Corey McGarr, the other Republican, has a 30-vote lead over Dana Almond, the Democrat. You know, I don't, maybe one of you knows, I don't know, I don't think we know, especially down to this legislative district level, what votes are outstanding and therefore what how it's likely to turn out. But a 30-vote margin obviously can flip.
What do you know about Pima County? How many votes are, we know that, I think Maricopa County is saying as many as 600,000 votes need to be counted. How about in Pima County? Do you have any idea, Dan, share?
No, all we know, all I'm seeing is that, you know, it says 95% of the precincts reporting on their website, but there's a lot of stuff that, you know, you have provisionals and you have lots of different things. So I wouldn't, these very close races, and I have never seen an election with so many races that are down to double digits. You know, we were seeing that in our school board races and things like that. So we can't call much at this point. So I'd hang on a couple of days. Just be patient. Let's just do it right.
It's interesting on the Pima County, the Pima Community College Board election.
It
looks like, well, Damian Klinko, the chair of the board, Tim and Dan, is been defeated.
Yep, he's gone.
And you got to wonder now, what does that mean for the leadership at Pima Community College and Chancellor Lambert?
Well, this has been a huge,
huge issue.
This has been a huge, strangely hot election. Strange in the sense that Pima Community College Board races are rarely hotly contested.
Yes.
But this was quite personal.
Mm-hmm.
And a loss by Klinko would be quite shocking, largely because he was really supported by the power structure. And I'm not talking about like just the business community. Regina Romero was one, the mayor of Tucson, a Democrat, was the one co-chair of Damian Klinko's campaign. And Jim Click, you know, Republican donor extraordinaire, was the other co-chair. And so he had the power structure on his side. And if he doesn't turn this out, then it's quite shocking and probably does mean, or quite likely could mean, the end of the reign of Lee Lambert as chancellor.
Dan, I know it's outside your area, but you've been following that one too.
I have, and actually these are both of the races on the ballot are in my area. These follow the supervisor districts. So Damian Klinko is District 2. Matt Hines also supported him. Damian had a ton of money, and I think at this point we can easily call this one. He's down 62-38%, and there's no climbing back.
No.
And Teresa Riel, the person who has defeated him, and I feel very comfortable saying that, taught there for 23 years, just recently retired. She was she was glad for some of the things PCC was doing, particularly along vocational pursuits, but then she was pointing out some things that it cost them to run down that road. In an editorial she wrote for our newspaper that had some great points, but she said what was missing on that board was the teacher's perspective, the instructor's perspective, and so Damian is gone for sure, and it is really surprising, as Tim pointed out, there's a ton of money in that race.
Go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
Very surprising.
Yeah, more than $150,000 donated to Damian Klinko's campaign, which is just insane.
Yeah.
And it was, I believe, about 20-some thousand to Teresa Riel's campaign. Now, I should say she has not, I said previously that that it likely spelled the end of Lee Lambert's reign. She said to me and, that she doesn't have a firm position on that. However, the people who voted for her, let me put it this way. A lot of the people who supported her definitely want to get rid of Lee Lambert as chancellor. So I suspect there will be pressure on her to go that direction.
Hmm.
That's a good point. Now, if you jump over to District 4, which is also in our area, it covers Green Valley, sweeps all the way around, goes to the top of Mount Lemmon. Greg Taylor, who looks like he's going to pull it out over Nick Pearson, I think would be along the lines of Damian on a lot of the issues. I sat down with him and Nick Pearson, and like them both, really good. Greg absolutely knows the issues and very well schooled on a lot of this stuff. Nick got into the race very late by his own admission and was still trying to play catch up on some of the things. So it'll be interesting to see how this reshapes that board, which is it's almost embarrassing to watch some of these meetings because there are just these vicious attacks on Lee Lambert and some of the ideas out there, and it's really unfortunate, quite honestly, and some of it is borders on childish. So
All right. We'll
see if this changes anything.
We need to take a pause right here. Mona's Danish Bakery is now taking pie orders and roll orders for the Thanksgiving. Dan, what about it? Are you a pumpkin pie guy?
I love muffins better than pie, but I'll eat anything.
And Tim, what about you?
I know they do that.
I think I need whipped cream or something to kind of choke down the pumpkin pie, but I love the other. I have pecan, you know.
Yeah.
If it doesn't drill a hole in my teeth from the sweetness, I will love pecan pie.
Mona's Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise, now taking orders for your Thanksgiving table. What kind of pie? What kind of dinner rolls do you want? Put in that order at monasdanishbakery.com. Open right now for lunch, open for breakfast, 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Saturday. Sunday, they open at 7. Let's take a break right here. Tim and Dan back right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Looks like Proposition 131, creating a lieutenant governor's position, is passing, I think, by a very comfortable margin. Are you happy about that, Tim Steller?
I personally am. The reason being that, you know, if we have a governor of one party, say a Republican governor, and you have a Secretary of State of another party, say a Democrat, you don't really want the Democratic Secretary of State taking over for a Republican governor. And so just for that reason, I think it's fine to have a lieutenant governor who runs as a kind of a teammate with the governor, and then you know if the governor leaves or dies or becomes incapacitated, it'll be somebody who's kind of like the person you voted for governor.
How about propositions, Dan, overall? Any surprises for you?
Oh, boy. Well, I just want to speak to what Tim was just saying, because I would – that's very sound reasoning. I don't think it's enough, though, to put on this – I'm going to call it another layer – at the top. And I also feel like the lieutenant governor is really the governor in waiting, and that's an unfair advantage. I want to choose the governor as a voter. And I know we are one of a handful of states, small handful of states, that do not have a lieutenant governor, but the expense of that person, I'm just not sure can be justified. But I get what he's saying, but the only reason we would have that situation is if the governor bounced out, probably to run for another position or take an appointment or something, or becomes ill. And both of those are generally not likely. And, you know, if you start a job, you should finish it. So I don't have too much sympathy for people who bail out of their terms, you know, halfway through. So I get the thought. It is going to go through without a doubt. I'm glad to see, and I'm looking to see if it's still ahead, that the young people who are brought here and are technically undocumented immigrants in our state will not have to finish high school and wonder what's next, that they can get in-state tuition. That is something that I expected to hear more opposition against down where I am, and I did not hear that. So that was good to see. And then, of course, the big one is the dark money. And I just have to ask, why did it take Terry Goddard several, you know, attempts to get this thing through when we can see what the numbers are here? People want to know who is financing political campaigns. And now, hopefully, we will, though people will always find ways to hide money.
A couple of the other ones, Bill, are the interestingly that, you know, there were three measures that dealt with our initiative and referendum powers, and The one that, let me see, I'm just trying to get the numbers right here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say one, I don't know if you, I would, someone was talking in my ear there, Dan, so I didn't, did you mention 310? I think this is really an important one. It was passing, I think, barely. This was the Arizona Fire District Safety Act that will really, this will really was an important, for rural medicine and rural fire districts, this was a very big deal, Dan and Tim.
Yeah, it's failing now, right, by the way?
It is failing.
It is, it's failing by a few thousand, more than 10, 20,000 votes.
So, I think it was like the cost of a cup of coffee.
It was 1 cent, or 1/10 of 1 cent. Our state tax rate would have gone from 5.6 to 5.7, but it appears it will not happen.
I think some people may see raise a tax, and they just said no to that. You know, they don't follow as closely. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, along those lines, we are approving the initiative that would require a 60% threshold for an initiative to raise taxes. So that initiative, that's Prop 132, is winning by 30-some thousand votes, probably will pass. So is the one that would require initiatives to be only about one topic and have that topic in the title. That's Prop 129. That's winning handily. The one that is losing handily is Proposition 128. That's the one that said that if any part of an initiative is found to be unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court, then essentially the legislature can do whatever it wants with it, amend it, you know, essentially repeal it, et cetera. That one is losing.
Anything more on the props before we move on, Dan? And by the way, we're executive decision here on the Buckmaster Show. We're just going to go the whole hour with you guys because we have barely touched the tip of the iceberg of everything we need to talk about. Anything more on props?
I want to ask Tim's opinion going back to 128, because it was something where you had to really sit down to try to understand this, and that is, you know, basically giving the state legislature some authority to make some decisions, and it was one of those deals where I think a lot of people felt uncomfortable. Just one, they didn't understand it, and you tend to vote no when you don't understand. And two, turning anything over to the state legislature or politicians these days just is anathema. And so I'm wondering if that's the reason it's going down so hard.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's always interesting when voters vote different ways on similar proposals or related proposals. So, you know, in this one, they had a very strong negative opinion, whereas these other initiatives, the one that establishes the 60% threshold and the one that requires one topic, they also impinge to an extent or in a way on voters' rights to you know, pass their own laws. But voters approved those. So, I mean, yeah, I think you may be right. It's A, confusing, and B, it was handing power directly to the legislature as opposed to, you know, setting new laws that will be hashed out, you know, the conflicts over which will be hashed out in court.
You know, getting back to 131, the lieutenant governor, I don't know, Tim, if you mentioned that not only would this create a lieutenant governor position, but the lieutenant governor wouldn't just be seated or, you know, sitting around doing nothing, presumably. He or she would be the head of an agency, a state agency. Did you mention that?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bill.
But that is actually a pretty big deal, isn't it, Dan Scheer?
It is, and that's one of the defenses for it, is that this would be taking a place of someone who you'd have to have anyway. Therefore, this person isn't waiting around like the vice president, you know, inquiring every day as to the health of the president and going to state funerals, you know, that kind of a thing.
Have you been to have your doctor's visit?
It's a real job. Yeah, how you doing? So it's a real job. It's a real job. I just don't think we need it, but that's me.
All right. We got about a minute to go before the break.
We only have a few races to talk about, like U.S. Senate, Governor of Arizona,
well, that's
Secretary
why
of State.
I've said I did a little switch on you guys, kind of did some of the lesser stuff. Yeah. It's not all important, right? But obviously, that will be what we were discussing in the second half hour and a lot more. So both you guys, I appreciate you sticking around, Tim Steller. And a quick comment, and Dan, thank you very much as well. For folks that your column may have gotten lost, and it was really a good column in today's paper, about voices in the head. Maybe we can touch on that a little bit after the break. But it was a good column. But
thanks. It's that traditional day after election column that has nothing to do with the election,
right? But anyway, let's take the break right here. Then Tim and Dan and Bill back with lots more to cover about election 2022. Now in the rearview mirror.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Oh, away we go now. This is the second half of the Buckmaster Show, doing election recap, spending the whole hour, and that's very appropriate with so much going on with yesterday's election. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. If you need a poinsettia, Green Things is the place to go. They raised $20,000, Tim Steller, at their warehouses over at Green Things. So perfect place to start your holiday decorating. Do you decorate usually, you and Patty?
As much as possible.
The whole house all for the holidays.
Yep.
Dan Shear of the Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, are you into the decorations for the holidays?
Well, we struck a deal a couple years ago at our house. If I could buy a metal one-piece tree from an art place in Tubac, and I don't have to like stick the branches in and all that. So we have a metal tree. We've had it for 3 years, and I'm in love with it.
It makes
it so easy.
You just set the table for me, because Zocalo Village, which is part of Green Things, has these beautiful, from Mexico, punched tin Christmas trees, and they are really nice. And you put a light under them, and it really, so if you don't want a real tree, think about one of these punched tin trees at Zocalo Village. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Okay, gentlemen, Tim Steller, looks like can Senator Kelly survive? He's got about 80,000 lead.
About 90,000 votes. I don't know. Maybe one of you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. My understanding is that the mailed-in ballots have been counted by and large, and the ballots cast at polling places on Election Day have by and large been counted, but that what is left is ballots like mine that were delivered, that were early ballots, but delivered in the days leading up from Saturday, Sunday, Monday, in that time frame. Am I wrong about that? Is that the general gist? Do you know?
I think that is the gist of it also, which means mine also is yet to be counted.
We're guilty. Anyway, so the reason I bring that up is that Mark Kelly at this stage has a 5 percentage point lead over Blake Masters. And I think, I just don't know what the rest of these votes are, but that is a healthy lead. So, of course, Blake Masters is saying that he expects to make it up, but I don't know. I wouldn't like to be in his position. And the other one where a Democrat is in a somewhat healthy lead is Adrian Fontes defeating Mark Fincham for Secretary of State. That is closer. It's 4.8 point lead, I believe, percentage points. So the others, Katie Hobbs has a slim lead over Carrie Lake. That could easily flip.
Lead has gone from 90,000 votes down to about 10,000.
Yeah, and Chris Mays has a 4,000 vote lead over Attorney General. And in the other races, Kimberly Yee, the Republican, has a large lead over Martine Quesada for state treasurer, and Tom Horn has a slim lead over Kathy Hoffman for superintendent of public instruction. So most of the races are could change, or about half of them could. Attorney general, governor, and superintendent of public instruction are probably too close to call. The others are starting to look somewhat solid.
And Dan, of course, the Mark Fincham election denier attracted tremendous national publicity.
And it could be that people just don't like him. It could all come down to that. Mm-hmm. It could be that he was maybe, I'm going to start to call this Carrie Lake syndrome. Someone asked me about those two candidates recently, Katie Hobbs and Carrie Lake, and I said, you know what? Katie Hobbs will drown in a cup of water. Carrie Lake will blow up the dam and not care who drowns. Mm-hmm. So they're two very different personalities there. And for some people, even though a lot of them backed off after the primary of some of the rhetoric, it still comes down to, for a lot of people, I just don't like you. And I think Fincham came off as that. I will say this. I don't think his attendance at the January 6th affair did him much good beyond a very small percentage of people, probably a good chunk of whom don't vote. So I am a little surprised to see that with Fincham, but I do think it came down to I just don't like him.
Well, it's interesting to watch. I think Yvonne Wingett Sanchez, formerly of The Republic, wrote a piece about his kind of non-campaign. I mean, Fincham, if you follow social media as I do, he was on constantly. He was constantly tweeting about the latest poll and about the nice people who were delivering literature for him and people who said they voted for him. And he, you know, Carrie Lake, lover or hater, she was out there campaigning. Mark Fincham was, you know, he joined different events, but he wasn't campaigning much, not in the same way that Fontes was. I guess in that way, he's sort of like Katie Hobbs, who was not as active a campaigner as Carrie Lake.
Dan, the Carrie Lake, what is that? What would that do if you have Carrie Lake and then you've got Carrie Lake as the Republican governor, you've got a Democrat Secretary of State, and let's see if Chris May is who you and I have known forever. I think you worked with Chris.
I did
at the Arizona Republic and the Phoenix Gazette those days. I've known Chris since she was the press secretary for Janet Napolitano and on and on. Certainly very well qualified. This you got to wonder. You'd have the Republican Lake and then some Democrats in there, kind of acting maybe as a check and balance.
Well, you know, can you check and balance Carrie Lake?
I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that. And I'll tell you what, she said something when she was in our office that really I found disturbing. We were talking about water and we were talking about desalination. And she said, yeah, you know, maybe we can go over and do something with Mexico. And I said, well, what about California? They're doing a little bit of it. No. They're too screwed up over there politically. When they straighten out, then we'll start talking to them. Well, that tells me that you don't have the best interests of Arizona at heart, because California isn't so screwed up and by anybody's standards that you couldn't at least agree with them on something that's of vital interest to the state, like, you know, water. And so that was, I found that to be perhaps the way that she would be acting routinely if she is elected, and that is still carrying this idea of vendettas or just not like it made me, you know, really uneasy. So would she partner with the Secretary of State or the Attorney General, anybody else who wasn't of her party? Would she be able to work well with them? I don't know. I still also think that the last few months have put Carrie Lake in a position of thinking of that next step, and which means that she's going to attack, if she's our governor, she's going to be attacking that job in a different way than if she thought she was going to be in there for 8 years. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, I mean, as far as checks and balances go, I think she may serve as her own check and balance, because she has a tendency to just go maybe too far, as in the instance you described, or the other day, campaigning a couple days before the election, for some reason, she was yelling at McCain Republicans again. I mean, why would you do that 2 days before, during voting? You know, there's no political event. So the point is, she tends to create her own enemies, and that will not stand her in good stead to get things done. Now, maybe getting things done isn't the priority. I don't know. As Dan suggests there, maybe there's a higher office she's already looking toward, not even having won this one yet. But I think it'll be, I don't think it'll be an easy ride for her if she wins, because I'm not sure anybody but Donald Trump can carry out that kind of Trumpist governing.
Don't we have another Senate election coming up in 2 years?
I guess that would be Sinema. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that would be Sinema.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Once again, a lot of ads will be, a lot of money spent on that. Dan, a final few thoughts before I take the break.
You know, I always find myself rolling my eyes after the election's over, because both sides come together, the winner and the loser, and they say, yeah, you know, really didn't hate you that bad, and I wish you the best. And, you know, this is just a wonderful person. Now, can Carrie Lake carry that, one, would she even have that attitude if she wins? And two, can she carry that spirit of cooperation into the state capitol and start working with the Secretary of State or the Attorney General and just say, yeah, just kidding on all that stuff. We're now going to work together and make this a great state. I don't think she's capable of it.
No. That's not going to happen. And that's why I think she's her own check and balance. She's just she's very much focused on what she perceives as her enemies. And I don't know. That doesn't necessarily put you in a good place to get things done.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Talk a little bit about local school board elections. Dan, you had one in Sahuarita. We'll hear about that. Also, some changes on the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board, back with Tim Steller and Dan Shear on the Buckmaster Show post-election edition.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, which, you know, it makes a great getaway. Take that three-hour drive, approximately three, from Tucson. East of Tucson, it's a pretty easy drive, I-10. You hit Lordsburg, take a left, then up to Silver City. And I say up because same elevation approximately as Denver, and the temperatures over there have always reflected. Yeah, it's about 5,000 to 6,000 feet, like 64 degrees right now over in Silver City. I don't know about you, but mid-60s, Tim Steller with me in studio from the Star, mid-60s, doesn't that translate to you, Tim, as perfect hiking weather?
Yeah, sure. But we should be there soon enough, not to take anything away from Silver City, but we've had beautiful weather.
We've had a little bit. Yeah, but anyway, Silver City makes a great getaway. More about what to do, and there's lots to do. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Dan Shear with us on the live line, presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's take a quick dive into some of these local school board elections. Dan, we'll start with you. Shelley Kice, I believe, has been the president of your school district down there, correct?
In the past, yes.
And she's no longer seeking re-election, but the Sahuarita School Board election, any changes there?
Yeah, we had two districts have races here. Yeah, in Sahuarita, we had an incumbent finish dead last, which was surprising, and he didn't get even half as many votes as the next person up above him, and so he names Kevin Opalka, and he was pro mask and pro, you know, a lot of things that a lot of people weren't. I'm not going to say that was the reason he went down, but I can say we had a very contentious meeting at one point where things got a little out of control, and there were some people who kind of blamed him for some of the things on that. But there's more to it. We have a guy who's at the top of the list there named Raul Rodriguez, who's been very involved in the schools. But he's one of those people who was, in my mind, was trying to politicize a nonpartisan race. And his big push was to take what he called emotional and social education out of the schools and replace it with reading, writing, and arithmetic, which, you know, the last I heard had never left. But he felt like we were spending too much time on things that were really not education related. Well, now he gets to show us how it's done, because it appears that he will be on the board, even though I will say our races are still very, very close.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at him. Looks like about 80 votes separates the first three people, and there's only two that get elected.
Okay, Tucson Unified Correct. School District, Tim Steller, the former mayor of South Tucson and a one-time councilwoman, wins. She was the big winner.
Yeah, Jennifer Ekstrom. Yep. She is all of those things. Also, mm-hmm. daughter of Dan Ekstrom, former yes. Pima County supervisor. Mm-hmm. She is by far the big leader. The surprise is in second place, where Val Romero, the man who ran against Steve Kozacik in the last Tucson City Council election.
I think he's run for mayor, too. I
believe
could be wrong.
So, yeah. Anyway, he's run a couple of times, has a more conservative approach generally, and that's not usually what gets elected in TUSD, but he is in second place. The person behind him is Rebecca Zapian. And then nobody else really seems to have a chance after that. Luis Gonzalez, William Solon, or Brianna Chilias.
Did you have some other districts you wanted to quickly mention?
There was interesting races in Amphi. It sounds like the dividing lines were similar perhaps to Sahuarita. Amphitheater and Catalina Foothills both had races that involved people who were kind of part of that maybe Steve Bannon-inspired movement, the Purple for Parents, who were kind of wanting parents to take back control of their school board. And that's not to say the other people weren't parents, but anyway, they lost. The incumbents won, and the people who were kind of raising that flag against critical race theory and all that stuff, they lost both in Catalina Foothills and Amphi School District.
And before let's veer from the elections briefly, because I alluded to this at the beginning of the show, Tim Steller, about your column today, that are these folks that were hearing voices in five, well, you set it up.
Okay. Well, so real quickly, I mean, I've heard of this research before, and then a column that Phil Boas at The Republic wrote last week kind of inspired me to make a kind of counter argument. It's not exactly on his point, but I talked about research on people. So Boas was talking about Jared Loughner and the man who attacked Paul Pelosi, and how people wrongfully attributed political motives to them because they were simply severely mentally ill, not rational. And my argument was that severely mentally ill people with psychosis actually are strongly affected by their cultures, including politics. And in this, I cite research. This woman from Stanford is one of the people who's done this sort of research. She did interviews in five different countries and found, for example, in Chennai, India, that people tended to have people with people with psychosis tended to hear familiar voices like family members, and they were often telling them, for example, to sweep the floor or go to the kitchen.
Non-violent.
Yeah,
voices.
In Accra, Ghana, they heard the voice of God very frequently. The relationship, it's never comfortable to be hearing voices, I don't think, but the relationship was less unpleasant for people in some of these countries. Whereas in San Mateo, California, where she did another set of interviews, there was a predominance of voices that were hostile and foreign to the person and had violent messages.
That's not a good thing.
No. So my argument was that kind of shows that we are producing the violence that we're reaping through our culture.
All right. Getting back to the election, Dan, you mentioned you in your long career have not seen anything really like this with all these close races. What are some of the other takeaways that are jumping out at you, Dan Scheer?
Well, there's an AP poll, and it said, what's sending you to the ballot box this year? And it came up with, number one, the inflation and economy. And so it always, people vote with their wallets. We've said that for years, and I think that is true this time. But a close second was people feeling that democracy was eroding, and that was a very interesting thought to me. I heard a very interesting phraseology on NPR the other day when they were talking about the abortion issue, which of course has been very important this time too, but they said, you know what, maybe that peaked a little early this year, and I've never heard of in terms of an issue peaking early, but maybe that actually did happen. But it does all come back to the wallet, and I really think that drove a lot of it. But the democracy point, I know that was very, very high on my list.
How about the diminishing of Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think that Republicans should take some warning signs from not necessarily Arizona, although Arizona has shows that that's not necessarily a really winning person to have on your ballot. That is Donald Trump as a backer. And across the country, even less so. I mean, in Arizona, I think the lesson is kind of mixed. But in
other places, the diminishing influence of Trump was much more pronounced.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So and I think an interesting thing that you saw in the last weeks was Republicans doing a great job of projecting or suggesting that they had the momentum and that, this what Dan said about the abortion issue peaking early, that was an idea that Republicans also pushed, and they pushed out polls that suggested they were going to have a red wave and all that. And I think, as it turns out, that was probably as much a tactic as it was a reflection of truth, that it was trying to project inevitability, and that just hadn't quite happened.
Got to go. Dan, did you have a final thought? Just about out of time.
No, just like I said, I think we learned a lot of lessons through this, and we still have some waiting to go. Everybody be patient.
Yes, okay. Be patient.
Dan Scheer, always a pleasure. Thank you, Dan, for everything you do. And Tim Stiller, thanks for coming in for the hour.
Thank you.
That'll do it. On behalf of Tim with me in studio, Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing, Dan on the phone, Bill saying, have a great afternoon, everybody.